Is your existing supply chain and logistics consultancy provider failing to deliver? Our experienced, thought-leading team at Loguru could be your choice for an intelligent and friendly professional supply chain. If you have a challenge in supply chain, procurement or logistics, or maybe just want to improve the value you get from them, visit loguru.co.uk. Complete end-to-end satisfaction guaranteed.
Coming up in this episode.
In April of 2020, my wife came in my office and sat down in front of me. And she says, congratulations. And she said, well, you're legitimate. I said, I didn't know. Mom and Dad never told me I wasn't legitimate. She says, Jim, we've been married for over 50 years. And for 50 years, I've explained to people what it is you do. She said, in the last week, both Marie and Ruth have called me and said, been hearing the word supply chain on the news. She said, isn't that what Jim does? My wife said, yes, that's what Jim does. And Ruth then responded, is it Jim's fault we can't buy toilet paper?
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining? And would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hello, a new year is here and a new season of Logistics Collective, the podcast, is about to start. Here we have the first of two episodes with an absolute global legend of logistics and supply chain. I hope you enjoy it. I've been looking around at the background to our website, logisticscollective.com, and also across all the podcast platforms, and I came to the relatively shocking conclusion that 20% of our listeners are from the USA. And whilst it's often said that the US and UK are two nations divided by a common language, we've got more in common than not. Same could be said for the logistics and supply chain industry, but differences there are. And these differences can drive some really interesting discussions. So I'm proud to welcome a US-based doyen of global logistics and supply chain, Dr. James Tompkins, when he's talking about logistics and supply chain, and Jim Tompkins, perhaps when he's talking about other incredible strategic subjects in management, who has decades of experience in really operating intelligent logistics businesses and fits absolutely the profile of a global thought leader perfectly. So, Jim, welcome, and it's lovely to have you here. How are you keeping?
I'm doing well, Malcolm, and thank you very much, and I feel very welcome.
Well, that is the intention. We're not here to make people feel uncomfortable. So, where are you based? Where are you today?
Headquartered in Raleigh, North Carolina, in the U.S.
I do know I've got some distant relatives in South Carolina. We do track. I've got New Jersey, New York, South Carolina, I think Florida, New Mexico, and then I have to go up to Canada to Vancouver Island for my relatives. But we were part of that great westbound migration, just that my part of the family got stuck here.
Well, we're not sure exactly how we're connected to my side of the family, but there was a Sally Tompkins that came across on the Mayflower that was supposed to be from England. So who knows where that is? We can't trace my ancestry back to Sally, but the same last name at least.
Well, there you go. I think maybe a larger boat if you do it next time.
Good.
So Jim, you've got an incredible track record and history of your career. Could you tell us a little bit more about it? Because I think for people of my generation and older, it always has been a curious choice to go into. And there weren't the same paths that existed. And we didn't really talk about logistics and supply chain back then. We might have talked about shipping or transport or warehousing. And we wouldn't have spoken about supply chain. We would have talked about planning and things like that. So could you give us a little bit of a background to the history of Jim?
Well, the history of Jim kind of begins with my father, who had a sixth grade education, but he was a real kind of a innovative type guy, liked to invent different things. And he noticed in me that I liked to take things apart and put them back together again. And so my father said, he said, you should become an engineer. Now, my father had no idea what an engineer was. He didn't know a civil engineer from a mechanical engineer, from an electrical engineer. But he said, you should be an engineer. So that was a part of me. So then when I got to high school, I asked Dad, where is the best engineering school? And he said, Purdue University. And so I said, good, I want to go to Purdue University. And so I finally did get into Purdue as a junior. I couldn't get in out of high school. I spent too much time on sports in high school, not enough time on the books, but I did get in. And I got my bachelor's and then my master's and then my PhD in industrial engineering from Purdue. And it was when I was at Purdue that I first started understanding what my major professor called material flow. And he talked about material flow within the building and material flow outside of the building. And we talked about material flow and information flow and cash flow. And that really began a broad thinking of what we then, and you're absolutely right, Malcolm, we didn't have the word supply chain, but we called it industrial distribution. We called it warehousing. We called it shipping. We called it physical distribution. And that became my real focus. And my master's and PhD were totally focused on industrial distribution. And so we didn't have the word supply chain until the early 1990s, but I've been doing supply chain since the 1960s. And so when I left Purdue with my PhD, the United States Draft Service thought I'd make a great soldier. And so I went into the Army. And there my title was either Dr. Tompkins or Private Tompkins, depending upon what they wanted done. Fortunately, most of the time, most of the people I worked with had no idea I was in the Army. And I got assigned to Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And I got assigned to the facility engineering function since I had degrees in engineering. And what I did at Fort Monmouth is I ran the fort, the physical facility. And so I had a planning department, I had a procurement department, I had a warehouse, I had about a 120,000 square foot warehouse. We had about $3 million worth of products. We had 400 tradesmen where we had painting and plumbing and electricians and riggers and air conditioning. And we maintained the city called Fort Monmouth. And so that gave me a tremendous amount of practical experience so that when I left the military in 1975, I went to North Carolina State University here in Raleigh, North Carolina, same place I live now. And I became a professor of industrial engineering there. And I taught material handling and facilities planning, physical distribution, logistics, and eventually what became known as supply chain. While I was teaching, I saw that there was a real lack of professional approaches to warehouses. And so I took my industrial engineering background, I took my Army experience, and I developed a two-day industrial training course called Planning and Managing Warehouse Operations. This course was the best in the world at that time. However, it was the only in the world. No one else was talking about warehousing as a profession. And so I was way ahead of myself. And so it was quite easy to be the best because I had no competition. And I wound up teaching that course literally around the world, including in the UK, in Europe, in Asia, South America, North America. I taught the course all over the place. And what I learned is for every time I had 20 people from an industry attend that seminar, I would find two consulting opportunities and one project. So while I was a professor, I hired one of my graduate students to help me with my consulting, and then another, and then another, and then another. And in 1979, my wife pointed out to me that my part-time income was six times larger than my full-time income. And so then we took a decision that I would leave the university and I would make my life's work Tompkins International. And so in 1979, we had five people and we did warehouse consulting. We expanded that into transportation and then inventory and then network planning. In the mid-80s, we added the whole technology suite of warehouse management systems, transportation management systems, S&OP, order management systems, et cetera. In the late 90s, we added material handling integration. Private equity bought 35% of us, which was very useful because they taught me about marketing and finance. That then got sold, that 35% to Blackstone in 2007. We were a Blackstone company between 2007 and 2015. 2015, Blackstone cashed out and we moved on to ownership by a Chinese company. And that company allowed us to thrive. We created a robotics business, and it was really exciting. And in 2019, we were really, really, really doing well. I was on the top of my game, and the world was just absolutely a marvelous place to be. Unfortunately, what followed 2019 for me is the same thing that followed 2019 for everyone who's listening. It was COVID. And on March 14th, 2020, we took a $32 million hit on canceled projects. And we said, oh, my, my. And so we got together that weekend and said, number one, what's going to happen next week? How are we going to make it through this? What do we need to do? And we reached a conclusion we needed to have a large layoff. I had never done a layoff in my life. I was a grower. I was a northeast direction guy, was not interested in cutting back, but it was the right thing to do. I went home that Saturday night and walked in the house and didn't say a word. My wife looked at me and she said, what's wrong? I said, we have to fire a large number of people, including, and I named three people. These three people had been with me for 30 years. And she looked at me, she said, Jim, that's not you. That's not what you do. I said, I know, hon, but this COVID thing is really bad and it's going to get worse. And so that's my job. That's what I have to take care of. Went to bed, didn't sleep, got up Sunday morning and decided I'd retire. To be perfectly candid, I made enough money and I was old enough, so I decided I would retire. And so I called a board meeting on Monday morning and told them that I was retiring, effective immediately, and told them I'd be happy to support, but I was not going to participate in the major layoff. And so I was out of there. I packed my stuff and left. Talked to the board frequently for a first month or two, but I was gone. And I stayed happily retired, Malcolm, for about 3 weeks. And into that third week, I got a phone call. And it was a past client, and we had designed a warehouse for the client, and his board didn't approve them building the warehouse. His board said, put the money in inventory and sell more and rent someplace. And so that's what he did. Well, his business had grown. COVID was very good for his business, and he needed that building built, and he needed it built then. And he asked me if I would help him. I said, well, I don't build buildings. He said, no, but Jim, you know a lot of people. And I said, well, yeah, I do know a lot of people. And so I helped him put together a team to build that building for him. Another guy called, he needed to raise some funds. I knew a lot of people in private equity, so I helped him raise some funds. And then in June, a friend of mine called who got laid off and said, Jim, I'd like to do consulting for you. I said, Mike, I don't do consulting anymore. He says, well, what are you doing? I said, I'm helping people. People are calling me up and helping me. And then after I do work for them, one guy sent me a case of wine. Another guy sent me like $30,000. And so I'm being paid to help people. And he said, well, that's amazing. Why don't I do that with you? And he said, well, that would be cool. And he said, what do you call this business? I said, well, I call this business Answer the Phone. I mean, the phone rings, I pick it up, I say hello. He said, Jim, you can't use that name. You need a name of it. I said, well, call it Tompkins Ventures. And so Tompkins Ventures is what I've done for the last 4 years. It's grown into a company. We're in 34 countries around the world. And what we are doing is we are doing all things supply chain, from building buildings to raising capital to transportation to 3PLs to technology to leadership. And we're really working across the board at Tompkins Ventures. And we're having a ball, because we're helping people. And so that's what I really enjoy. It's been a lifetime of a fun, because I continue to have new opportunities to learn and to take what I've learned and apply it. And so I've really left one career, and without any forethought or wisdom, I started a new career, and the new career is even better than the old. So I'm having a ball.
So to me, I mean, there's a huge amount of integrity in terms of what you've said within there. And clearly there's a real force of curiosity that seems to drive you. I think that, you know, what is out there? How can it be better? How can I see more? How can I understand more? The one thing I've got to sort of say to you is that I would imagine your decision to make the step back from Tompkins International must have been very hard made. I know in terms of, and I wouldn't even use my little business, Liguri's name, in the same sentence as what you've achieved, but it is incredibly personal to me. And also it is incredibly personal in the sense it is here. We have a simple statement whereby we're here to help people that we like. We're here to help people that want to be helped. And we sort of get to a certain stage for us, which is it's really important to have an emotional connection. And I sort of really reflect with you in terms of, one, it is, should you stop doing what you love to do? The answer to that is no. Should you say, well, okay, I want to do it in a form that I actually enjoy doing? Absolutely. And utterly fascinating background. And it's sort of interesting. I've met two types of logisticians that have impressed me. Those with an engineering background and those with a science background. And I think it comes down to there's a part of process and logical thinking that come as part of this. And just really interesting. But maybe I'm talking too much about me. I mean, but what does working in logistics and supply chain, the supply chain industry, mean to you?
Well, I don't think you're talking too much, Malcolm. In fact, you're making a lot of sense. I do think that curiosity that my dad identified way back when and was the engineer in me from his perspective is what you're talking about. And then having the connectivity to people, that makes it kind of logical that I'd be an industrial engineer, because industrial engineers are oftentimes called the people engineer. So I think you're summarizing it adequately and perfectly. I also think that your point about me leaving Tompkins International was very difficult. My wife used to refer to the business as my girlfriend, because I spent more time with the business than I did with her. And so that would get us in trouble. Sometime we'd be out at the restaurant. My wife would say, well, you spent the whole day with your girlfriend. Well, she meant I would spend too much time working. But sometimes people would overhear that and wonder what the heck's going on over at that table. But it was really like a child or a girlfriend in that I loved that business and I had a passion for the business. When I actually left it, I was very sad, but I thought it was the right thing to do for the business because I wasn't the right person to write it down. I was the right person to take it to the next step. And I felt a little bit like this is not how it was supposed to end. But as I now have got past that and I look back, it really was a blessing because it allowed me to unleash the next layer of me. And in fact, at the last 5 years at Tompkins International, I had a job. I had really perfected it. I'd stopped making mistakes. Interestingly, I went 7 years without writing a book. That was the driest spell in over 40 years of not writing a book. It's because I had stopped making mistakes and therefore I'd stopped learning. And so when I went to Tompkins Ventures, I thought, oh my goodness, a great opportunity to start making mistakes again. And guess what? I wrote another book. And so it's kind of interesting how that evolved.
So this is the driving force about your authorship of your books is, okay, we see some mistakes and then I'm going to go and write about it and really share what you've learned and you try and avoid that Groundhog Day effect whereby people make the same mistakes day in, day out, and at least give people a reference point.
Absolutely.
I have read your book in terms of logistics procurement and it is beautifully written. I am going to propose some observations back to you at a later time, but it was beautifully constructed, really easy to read. But how many books have you written?
31 books.
Wow. 31.
Yeah. And you give me a little bit too much credit that I understood my mistake and so I wrote a book about it. The fact of the matter is I understood I made a mistake, but I didn't know why, so I had to write a book to figure it out. So I write books to figure stuff out.
That's interesting.
So it's not... I'm not trying to necessarily help the other guy. I'm trying to help myself, and it results in a book that maybe can help some other people. But it's interesting. But you asked about my my participation in logistics and supply chain and what it means to me. It's kind of like one of my kids or one of my grandkids. It's so cool to see how supply chain has evolved. I mean, I knew supply chain, you knew supply chain, Malcolm, when it was 1 year old, you know, when it was a little bitty baby. And we were kind of viewed as those guys back there, you know, those warehousing shipping folks that weren't really a part of the company. In fact, I can recall back in the 1970s, we got a project at a major sophisticated global company. And when we reported the work the first day, the guard came out and he said, "Aren't you working on the warehouse project?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Warehousing people park in the back of the building." I was not allowed to park in front of the building because I was one of those warehouse guys. And so we said, "Yes, sir," and moved the car to the back of the building. And so what we have seen is the respect of the profession has just exploded, especially in the last 4 years. In fact, I recall very clearly in April of 2020, I was sitting in the same chair I'm sitting in right now, and my wife came in my office and sat down in front of me. My wife never sits down in front of me in my office. She comes in chairs, she talked to me, but rarely does she sit down. And she sat down. I thought, oh my goodness, what have I done now? Is it Wednesday? Did I forget to take the trash down? Did I forget to break down all the Amazon boxes? Did I leave the refrigerator door open? I must have really messed up. She's sitting down. And then she smiles. And I thought, oh, it's going to be okay. She smiled and she says, "Congratulations." I said, "Well, thank you. What did I do?" And she said, "Well, you're legitimate." I said, I didn't know. Mom and Dad never told me I wasn't legit. I thought I'd been legitimate all these years. And she says, No. She says, "Jim, we've been married for over 50 years. And for 50 years, I've explained to people what it is you do. And I tell people, Jim does supply chain. And they say, what's that?" And she said, "I try to explain it." And they kind of look at me like, okay, so I guess her husband doesn't work. I don't know what it is. She said, "In the last week, both Marie and Ruth have called me and said, I have been reading about supply chain in the newspaper, and I've been hearing the word supply chain on the news." She said, "Isn't that what Jim does?" And my wife said, "Yes, that's what Jim does." And Ruth then responded, "Is it Jim's fault we can't buy toilet paper?" And so the thing that's clear now is supply chain is real. We have chief supply chain officers. We have supply chains on the board of directors of major companies. And so my little baby has grown up and is now a strapping 45-year-old business man or businesswoman doing really, really, really great work. So it's a pleasure and an honor to be associated with the supply chain logistics industry, because today it is really important. We have arrived. And so it's really cool.
I think the statement of "we have arrived," I think, is a really interesting one. I think whatever is done even today, and I always think we can be better, and I think there are new challenges out there associated with sustainability, and I think we've got to configure our solutions better. And I argue that our logistics service providers could be actually more profitable, more sustainable, and even capable of a whole lot more. But I would still say what is done today is pretty damn wonderful. And it's always interesting. I always think it's, in some senses, it's a polite industry, because you don't recognize it. Most the normal Janet or John or Joe or wherever in the street will just turn around and say, well, everything around them has been delivered to them on the back of a truck. Yeah, all the medicines delivered on the back of the truck. Everything that they're wearing has been delivered on the back of a truck. The only thing that won't have been delivered on the back of a truck might have been if they've got their own market garden or their own small holding and they're growing their own vegetables and whatever. But even then, probably the seeds have been delivered on the back of a truck and any of the implements that they need to make it. So it's all around us. And yet people sort of aren't aware of it. I like to call it magistics, because it's more like magic, because the normal person doesn't actually understand how the hell all of this actually happens. And they only really call it out when it's not there and when it has a glitch. And it can be quite simple. You've mentioned toilet roll. You can have it as bread. You can have it as any normal commodity that people will go crazy for if there's no availability. You know, logic will leave their minds, and you know, there are always alternatives. But it just takes one of these items, one of these millions of SKUs that are out there, to be a key one, and then, okay, panic kicks off. I just wonder about the connected thought that people might have that says, well, if I get upset about this, what about everything else? How on earth does everything else connect into this? And therefore, what is actually happening is of real value to me. And I think you're absolutely right, Jim, in terms of combination. Certainly COVID epidemic really drove that. It actually, people see its value. But I would still argue most of the time they don't buy those services in the right way. But that's perhaps for another day, sir. So why are you so passionate about your role at Tompkins Ventures? I think I've got the curiosity and I also get the passion. You know, you, in all honesty, you know, you've probably had the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, I've got enough now. You know, you've got ample provision for you and your family. And there's always another driving force that comes behind that keeps people going. So what's your passion?
The passion is, you actually said it up front, is help people. I mean, I just really see people struggling. So theoretically, if a person is on the side of the road with a flat tire, or a person is having health problems or whatever it is, I have a compassion for them. Where I have capability to help, I want to help. I've been given a lot of experiences. My goodness, I've made a lot of mistakes. And so I've learned from those. And so I can really help people. I can help clients. I can help clients who are struggling with providing a good wage for their employees. I can help people, the companies that are struggling with providing a quality product, an innovative product for their clients. And I can, through my background, you know, it's so cool when I've done this for 50 years. I've learned so much that when something happens, I can say, oh my goodness, this is just like this situation we had. And that time we did this and this, which didn't work, but then we did this and it did work. And so now I can make that happen. So it's the innovation and the application of past experiences to current circumstances that allow us to make people have more success in their business, more success in their career. And that to me is just really fun. I mean, that's really exciting. In fact, you know, some people say, oh, Jim, he's hardworking and so forth. I am not hardworking. I'm not dedicated. What I am is I am a supply chain junkie, and I love supply chain. And if I love golf as much as I like supply chain, you'd call me a golf bum, because all I would do is golf. But I don't like golf like I like supply. I do supply chain 24/7. Because it's really enjoyable. It's a cool thing to do. And especially at this point, because people are clapping and really appreciative of how we can help them. And so I've been blessed to be given this opportunity, and I just enjoy every day of it.
So really is I wouldn't describe it as all-consuming, but it occupies perhaps a large part of your thinking processes on a day by day basis. There's this absolute help people, and I love the things about I make mistakes and I want to talk about them. And I've had the good fortune of let's say buying quite a lot of complex logistics in my time. And I actually say when we get to those sort of beauty parades, which are that it's the wrong way to describe it, final presentations with case studies, etc. I hate a hygienic case study. I hate perfection. Yeah. What I really want to know is that I want to look at people and say that I want to understand what character building experiences did you have, and how did you respond, and how did you react, and what did you learn? And most people don't do that. You know, we want to have a very clean and cleansed and perfect worldview, which everybody will look around and say, no, that very rarely happens. So I absolutely get what drives you. I mean, I've been forever fascinated. I mean, you know, I started my life as a chemist, an industrial chemist. And then I began to look at all the brand names of the products that we were supplying, and I got curious as to how and why and how it all fitted together. And that was my spark of interest in terms of that. And I do remember going to the early days presentations, and this would have been maybe late 80s, early 90s, can't remember what, but I remember going to a hotel location for somebody to explain this wonderful new concept of supply chain. But of course, that stood because, again, human minds simplify. So we were making a step up and connecting things and calling it supply chain. And we were talking about process ownership amongst that. But of course, it's more complicated than that. It's a bit like as you're studying science, we oversimplify in the early stages so that people get it. But then we then increase the amount of complexity as we begin to understand more. And the truth of the matter, it's not supply chain. These are multidimensional supply networks that connect and disconnect and interact and with each other. And so it's wonderfully and gloriously complex. It's an interesting time at the moment, isn't it? It's an interesting time to exist. What do you think are the most difficult issues that we're facing today?
Well, yeah, interesting. There's a lot of other words we could put in place for the word interesting, but My, there's never been a time in history when we've had the level of global conflict that we have today. The Ukraine-Russia thing is horrific. The Israeli, Gaza, Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, Pakistan thing is huge. The tension over Taiwan is tremendous, and so It's a time of global conflict that's greater than World War II. At the same time, we have inflation like we've never had before. We've never had this level of inflation for as long as we have. And so those two factors result in some huge levels of uncertainty as to what we're doing. And the number one concern on the part of CEOs is uncertainty. We're not sure what to do. And then we put on top of that the trade wars, which are having a major impact, even larger than the global conflicts. And we have people talking about nearshoring and friendly shoring and reshoring. And we hear people talking about, let's do China plus one. Let's take a lot of our production out of China, and we'll do China and Vietnam or China and India. And then you hear some people talking about ABC, anywhere but China, where you're trying to remove supply chain from China, which is a very, very, very difficult task. I don't want to say it's impossible because everything's possible. But when it goes back to the raw materials, you can take final production out of China relatively easy, but I was working with a company that was it was an underwear company, and they took all their men's underwear out of China and brought it to Vietnam, and that was about a $100 million spend. And so they took a $100 million spend out of China, and so that met the board commitment to reduce dependence on China. But what they found when they took the $100 million of final production out of China and moved it to Vietnam, what they really did is they moved $4 million worth of value add out of China, and they left 96 there. Because the cotton, the fabric, the dyeing, the elastic, the packaging materials all still came from China. And in fact, what they did is they increased the cost because they added an additional trip to Vietnam, and then transportation out of Vietnam was higher. So this globalization thing is another big issue. And then another big issue that's just really playing havoc with us is the global warming and the sustainability topics. Europe is even doing a better job than any place else in the world with respect to sustainability, but it's still a terrible problem and a huge problem that's impacting weather, which is now having a major impact on the Panama Canal and reducing of production or productivity through the canal tremendously, which is resulting in increased transportation cost, increased lead time. And then, of course, the first point I made about conflict is impacting the Red Sea and therefore the Suez Canal because of the Yemen rebels. And so, when you impact the Suez Canal you're going to have major impacts in Europe. When you impact the Panama Canal, you're going to have major impacts in the Western Hemisphere. And so between the global conflict and the weather and the inflation and the globalization, there's not much that isn't in a state of disarray. And so it's a very, very challenging time. And so it's not like you have one problem. It's much more like we're playing whack-a-mole, and the mole keeps popping up its head, and we enact it, and the mole pops up. And it's an ongoing struggle to figure out which problems to solve. And what's happened over the last 4 years is, because of this ongoing set of issues, of course, built on the back of COVID, that it's on top of those things that we now are facing the reality that we've stopped being innovative for 4 years because we've been so busy whacking the mole. And so now what we need to do is get back to innovation. So if you said, what's the worst disruption that we're having? I don't know. It almost depends on the hour of the day, which one is the biggest thorn in our side. But there are major, major, major disruptions that are creating major complexity for us in the supply chain logistics world. And we need to realize that we can't let the problems get us down. We need to address the problems, but then we also need to be innovative to improve our operations and reduce our costs, improve our service, because that's what the world expects from us.
And that concludes the first episode of our two-part discussion with Jim Tompkins. Remember, you can listen to Logistics Collective, the podcast, on logisticscollective.com, or indeed, think about following us on the normal podcast channels you might use, such as Spotify, Apple, and others. Part 2 will be released soon. Until next time, bye for now.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.